Stories and content in Weird Darkness can be disturbing for some listeners and is intended for mature audiences only. Parental discretion is strongly advised.
Welcome, Weirdos. I'm Darren Marlar, and this is Weird Darkness. Here you'll find stories of the paranormal, supernatural, legends, lore, crime, conspiracy, mysterious, macabre, unsolved, and unexplained. If you're new here, welcome to the show. And if you're listening to Weird Darkness on the radio, on a streaming station, or on YouTube, be sure to look for and subscribe to Weird Darkness in your favorite podcast app as well. I upload episodes every day of the week. And if you're already a member of this weirdo family, please take a moment and invite someone else to listen. Recommending us to others makes it possible for me to keep doing the show. And while you're listening, be sure to check out WeirdDarkness.com where you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, MeWe, and more. Coming up in this episode, it's Creepypasta Thursday, and this week I'm sharing a creepypasta that one of our weirdo family members suggested. It's a series they found on Reddit called My Property Isn't Normal by Redditor MurderBird17. The episode will have some graphic language and scenes, so it might not be best for younger ears. Now, bolt your doors, lock your windows, turn off your lights, and come with me into the Weird Darkness. You could say I live in the middle of nowhere. I prefer to call it in the middle of the wilderness, though. And after living alone out here long enough, I thought I'd become familiar with the land out here and even get comfortable. But I never have gotten comfortable. Maybe used to this place, but never comfortable. Pretty sure I can hold my own out here for the time being, but even so, lots of weird stuff happens out here. Glad to finally have a way to tell strangers who probably won't judge or call me crazy, though. Back to the topic at hand, weird stuff. I'll start with the first odd experience I had here. When I first purchased this land, I was really excited. There was already a house on the property that was the perfect size for me. Not only that, but it seemed pretty new, like the former owners didn't stay around very long. Yeah, red flags, but how was I supposed to know how messed up this place was? Anyway, I move in without any issues, and within a week, I'm out on some of the trails that were already there, looking for deer tracks and other game trails. I'm actually having a pretty relaxing time until I swear I hear a baby say, "Mama," in the most stereotypical voice I've ever heard off in the distance. Now, like I said, I'm here in the middle of nowhere, so there shouldn't be anyone for miles. I just shook it off as me hearing things. 20 minutes later, I hear the same voice say, "Mama," again. Only this time it's 40 yards away on the other side of some trees and brush. It didn't even sound like a real baby, it just sounded like some disturbed dude. Of course, at this point, he is definitely on my property as well. I start making my way through the undergrowth, and then when I'm sure I'm about to hit where he was, the brush clears out to a clearing, and I finally get a glimpse of the man. He was buck naked and halfway behind a tree, and flaunting a huge smile while his eyes stayed kind of squinty. He was also pretty skinny, as I could see his ribs. Now, usually you hear people say that, "At this moment my blood ran cold," but honestly, mine didn't. I was looking at some butt-naked crackhead trespassing on my property. He decided to let out another "mama" during silence when I was trying to figure out my next move. So I promptly responded with a hearty, "What the hell are you doing?" That's when he decided my next move for me. He started running at me, and I might have run away if he hadn't been so scrawny. So when he reached me with that big smile and looked like I was about to grab me, I punched him in the throat. It was a good punch. I was proud of it, honestly. It would have kept any normal man on the ground for at least a minute. This is when I got the first hint that this wasn't a normal man. While I was standing there, proud of my Mike Tyson-level haymaker, the guy immediately got back to his feet, and before I had time to hit him again, he dive-tackled me to the ground, and it hurt pretty bad. He somehow pinned my shoulders to the ground, and no matter how hard I kicked and punched him, he wouldn't let up. So I was forced to use Plan B. I pulled out my trusty Bear Grylls survival knife and stabbed him in the gut twice. This finally got his attention, and he hopped back to his field, slinging blood all over me in the process. I got back to my feet, knife in hand, and waited for him to do something else. All he did, though, was stick a finger in his wound, then lick the blood off. Then cartwheel into the woods, crying like an actual newborn baby this time. Now, by this point, I was pretty on edge, and right as he got far enough away that I could no longer hear him, I turned and walked home. I know I should have run, but running through the woods is so tiring and I just didn't feel like it. When I got home, all was normal again. For a while. Another story that comes to mind when I think about odd things happening around the area is the event that led me to no longer camp in my own woods. By the time that the events in this story took place, I'd already experienced quite a few things on this property, and this was easily the third freakiest thing to happen up to that point, right behind the naked stab victim that cried like a newborn baby and cartwheeled off into the woods. This time, I had decided that I wanted to go camping. Despite all the stuff that had happened, I had never been seriously injured in those woods, so why not go to sleep in them? Bad choice, I know. Anyway, the first hours when I got into the woods went fine. I set up camp, built a fire, burned myself trying to cook a hot dog, piss on the fire that burnt me. Then I started to realize camping is pretty boring when you're all alone. So I decided to go to sleep. Next thing I know, I wake up to the sound of a young girl's voice down in the creek. Sounds like she's college type age. She's saying, "Help! I need some help down here! I'm lost! Dad! Help!" And I can hear her down in the creek from my tent. Now, this isn't the first time I've been lured into the woods by a voice pleading for help, but this voice was a lot more convincing than the others. Nonetheless, I still brought my newly purchased .45 caliber handgun that I had bought for dealing with the things on the land. I made my way to the creek, flashlight in hand, and headed down to the voice. Soon, I found the source. Now, I didn't put the flashlight beam on her right away because I didn't want to blind her, but I could clearly see the outline of a small girl sitting on the bank of the creek. I got about 15 feet away and she stopped me, stating that, "You really don't need that flashlight with the moon out like this." It wasn't even close to a full moon, so that confused me a little. I replied with, "I don't know about you, but I can't see a thing out here. Let me help you, though. Are you hurt?" Then I started to shine the flashlight on her, but she screamed, "Stop!" before I got to her face. This time, her voice wasn't as convincing. I could tell she wasn't human. Now, what you guys need to realize is that I'm not a badass, and I'm not trying to sound cool or tough. But ever since something happened 3 years ago, the same event that caused me to move out here, I don't respond to situations the same anymore. Maybe I'm not scared of death anymore. Maybe I'm mentally unstable. Maybe I'm weird. But when I establish that this thing wasn't human, I start to smile. It fooled me, got me out here in the woods, in its domain, and was probably going to make an attempt on my life. But I might as well piss it off a little, so I flicked my flashlight up and revealed its face. It actually was a girl. Sort of. She was super pale and had abnormally large eyes that were completely black. When the light hit her face, her head snapped forward and made eye contact with me, and her jaw dropped open 3 times larger than any human could. And then she screamed. It was loud, like inhuman loud. It sounded like a girl's scream, but as if it were being played through massive speakers to make it ear-splitting. Then I felt something closing around my neck. She hadn't moved, but was somehow choking me, still screaming. I've realized while living here that the entities that can hurt you can also get hurt themselves. Now, most of them are as tough as nails, but they can be hurt. This memory went through my head just as I felt something warm dripping onto my neck and my left ear went quiet. Busted eardrum. I aggressively threw my flashlight at her, and it connected with what I assume was her eye. I couldn't tell for sure because I didn't have a flashlight. And yes, I forgot to use the gun. It was new, and in the current life or death situation, I forgot I had it. Luckily, this girl wasn't one of the tough ones, and I felt the grip of my neck loosen and her scream stopped. No sooner had I taken my first breath when she bent over backwards possession style and sprinted into the woods in reverse. When I finally caught my breath, I slowly walked by to my campsite and went to sleep in the tent. You may be asking why I didn't go back home after that, but it was a 20-minute hike and my flashlight was broken, so I had to wait till morning. Slept pretty good, though. No noises woke me up. I woke up the next morning expecting my ear to be killing me, but miraculously, it was completely back to normal. I later figured out that it was the lady in the tree who fixed my ear, but that's a story for another time. That morning, I just packed up everything and headed back home. The only thing that got messed up was my flashlight, so I wasn't even that disappointed in the trip. I still don't camp out there anymore because no matter how weirdly wired I am, that girl really did freak me out a good bit, and I'm sure she's still out there. What you'll notice so far is that these entities aren't really very effective killers. But that doesn't go for everything out here. I can't tell you about the property without mentioning Skinny. Frickin' Skinny. I understand that skinwalkers are a common topic on the horror scene at the moment, and from what I can tell, I think that's the creature that I'm dealing with. But I could also be wrong, because if this is a skinwalker, it's advanced to another level. Not only does it imitate voice, it imitates appearance, and it really wants me dead or gone. I like to call it Skinny. I think it pisses him off. And when I say his name, I say it loud because especially at night, I know he's listening. I've lived here for 3 years now, and he's been harassing me for about a year. And he's good. One of the smartest things to come after me so far. The only one that can seem to almost get in my head. He tries to lure me out, not by pretending to be someone in trouble like other imitators that I've dealt with before. He's aware that that stuff doesn't work on me anymore. No, he tries to piss me off. He wants me to try to kill him. The problem is, we both know I probably can't. One time he got me, though. I was watching a documentary about veteran suicide. It is a terrible topic. I'm a supporter of our armed forces, and I think it's terrible that our government doesn't take better care of the vets that risk everything overseas so we don't have to. They were doing a slideshow of men who had unfortunately lost the struggle with their own demons. I had to look away for a second because this one guy that appeared on the screen looked too young and happy to have gone to this dark of a place. He was mixed race from what I could tell, athletic looking, and had a big dimpled smile on his face. When I look away, I'm suddenly staring at the same kid, outside my window. Same smile, same build, same uniform. One difference. Across his forehead was the word failure. I instantly knew it was Skinny. He wasn't trying to imitate this kid. He was insulting him. And he finally struck a nerve. I'd seen him imitate so many other people and try so many other tactics, but this was the one that finally broke me. I was ending this creature. I exploded out of my chair and bolted from my bedroom, grabbed my .45 caliber handgun, and proceeded to walk towards the same window the young soldier was still staring through. I got within 5 feet and saw that the word had changed. It now spelled out, "I deserved it." After reading this, I didn't hesitate to raise my gun and fire 2 shots, but I think he ducked them. Bastard's fast. I stormed outside to try and find him, but he wasn't anywhere to be seen. That's when I hear, "Gotcha!" whispered into my ear, and I was flung against the wall of my house. The gun flew out of my hand in the process. Broke 2 ribs and dislocated my right shoulder. I was a dead man, and he knew it. Ever since the incident that led me to buy a house by myself out in the middle of the woods, I don't think I've ever felt fear again. Something is wrong with my head, but I did feel defeat. I fell for his trap. And now he's going to kill me, As these thoughts passed through my brain, I passed out from the pain, and the concussion, probably. Then, for some reason that I still don't understand, I woke up. It was bright outside, and I was covered in blood and in more pain than I'd ever been in my entire life. But I was alive. Why was I alive? I struggled to stand up with my right arm hanging loosely at my side, and I soon noticed the words carved into the outside wall of my house. Next time. Thank you, Skinny. Ever since I got back from the hospital, I told the doctors I fell off of a roof. I've been trying to find ways to deal with or kill a skinwalker, if there is a way, or if he's even a skinwalker. He beat me. I'm usually pretty lighthearted with most of my experiences, no matter how intense they are, but I just can't with this one. Because if I lose to Skinny again, I guess I'll be signing off for good. Be careful out there, and don't be fooled like me. There isn't always a next time. But hey, not dead yet, so maybe there will be a next time. I plan on writing down more of my experiences in the future, so keep your eyes peeled for those. Until next time, Cole signing off. When Weird Darkness returns, it's part two of our story, My Property Isn't Normal, by MurderBird17. Coffee. It's a necessity. Most of us can't be bothered to even be civil to our families until we've had our first cup of joe. I can drink coffee all day, and often do while working on the podcast. And now, I've chosen an exclusive coffee just for the task. Weird Dark Roast Coffee. I love chocolate, I mean, who doesn't? So I specifically asked for a blend with at least a hint of cocoa, and Evansville Coffee, who roasts each bag to order, knocked it out of the park when they sent me a bag to taste test for approval. Weird Dark Roast Coffee has deep notes of cocoa, caramel, and a touch of sinister sweetness that makes it great hot or cold. Personally, I like to put a little milk in it when I'm drinking it hot, but it is amazing, black, and poured over ice. Well, now you can drink it too. And the only place you can find Weird Dark Roast Coffee is at WeirdDarkness.com. I'm so sure you'll love it that we've even set it up for you to get free delivery on your first order if you use the promo code WEIRD. I'm happy to see that my experiences from part one got some attention. Wasn't expecting this stuff to actually get some traction. I'm mainly here just to vent and have a place to catalog the stuff that happens around my house. People always seem to enjoy the part where the naked dude attacked me, then cartwheeled into the woods, crying like a baby when I stabbed him. Still not sure if it was human. Now I feel obliged to tell more of my experiences. Also, feel free to leave any questions you have, and I'll try to answer them in the next post. That being said, if you haven't read part one, I suggest you go back now and read it. I'm going to tell the following experiences as if you already know about the other experiences that I've written about having on this property. The place is not normal, after all, and takes some getting used to. Now that the intro's out of the way, I think we can start with Camo. And Camo is a frickin' nuisance. First time I came into contact with him was during the first white-tailed deer season I had on my property. Now, I'm a hunter, but the program that is helping me after the incident said that I wasn't allowed to have guns because the noise draws too much attention. Bullcrap. I live in the middle of nowhere and there isn't anybody else for miles, unless you count the Chosen, but I'm pretty sure the program isn't worried about them. Luckily, the lady in the tree hooked me up with the .45 caliber I now have in my possession, but I didn't have it upon meeting Camo the first time, unfortunately. Anyway, back to the story. I first saw him when I was walking towards a ladder stand that I'd set up on a tree to watch deer, since I could no longer kill them. And yes, I could have had a bow, but I'm useless with a bow. I'd risk just hurting the animal. I don't like the idea of an animal that's suffering because I couldn't make a shot that would kill it instantly. Now, as I approach my stand, I notice a figure already sitting in it. It's about the size of a regular human. He was dressed in full camouflage, pants, jacket, boots, hat, face mask, and backpack. He actually seemed like a regular person, which I hadn't seen any of those in the woods for the entirety of my 4 months I'd been living there. The things that live on this property are generally more extreme. but no matter how relieved I was to see a proper human for once, he was deep in my property and hunting in my stand. I had to get him to leave. I reluctantly shouted over to him, "Hey, you ain't supposed to be here. Time to go, dude." Now, I was about 75 yards away and to his left, but I yelled plenty loud for him to hear me clearly. He didn't flinch. He stayed facing straight forward like a statue. What a jerk. Look, try to be creepy all you want, but ignoring somebody like that is just rude. I know he hears me. I have reason to believe he was just trying to freak me out because I've made him break character before. So after I yell and he ignores me, I start getting impatient. I yelled the same thing at him again, a little louder, and still ended up with the same response. What a jerk. Well, now I'm livid because he's making me ruin all my chances of seeing deer this afternoon by making me yell at him. So naturally, I start a brisk stroll over to tell him off to his face or maybe kick his ass. I already noticed he didn't have a rifle, so I just assumed that he was watching like I was planning on doing. Of course, he could have had a concealed handgun, but I'm a dumbass, so I didn't consider that. Then I heard the crunch of something under my foot and the sudden sound of rope sliding across a surface at high speed. I froze for a fraction of a second, and before I could even say, "Uh-oh," I'm hanging upside down from my ankle. There was a loop around my leg that held me suspended 7 feet off the ground like a damn cartoon. I was like a Looney Tunes character. I couldn't help but roll my eyes. I immediately knew it was camo, and when I look up or down, I was upside down, so I don't really know where I had to look, but I saw him slowly climbing down the ladder. Like, really slowly. What a dramatic guy. If he wasn't so obsessed with appearances, he probably could have killed me. That's what I think he wanted to do anyways. There was a machete on his hip that I could now see, and the blade was chipped at in a way that made it look serrated. Wouldn't have been a very useful tool unless you wanted to use it to inflict pain. I think the biggest flaw with Camo's trap, though, was that he didn't account for the single fact that 99% of people who live alone in the woods learn that carrying a large knife at all times is a necessary thing if you want to stay alive. I wish I could tell you that I did a flip after I cut myself down and landed on my feet like some sort of badass, but I didn't. I landed on the back of my neck. My vision went dark for 15 seconds or so, which I guess was enough time for Tweedle Dumbass to finally get to the bottom of the ladder stand. As I stood up, I saw that he was standing completely still at the base of the stand, still 50 yards away from me, staring at me. I could hear his thoughts from here. "Damn, how did he get out of that? Crap!" And then he turned and bolted. This dude was booking. I lost sight of him in less than 30 seconds into my chase, and I had to give up. I need to jog more. And what's more, by the time I got back to the ladder stand, it was already getting dark. I didn't even get to watch any deer. I've seen Camo on multiple other occasions as well, but I figured him out. He got me the first time, but his traps really aren't that sneaky. They're elaborate, but not sneaky. He always appears in an area that I plan on hunting in. Don't know how he knows where I'm going to be, but I stopped questioning stuff on this land a long time ago. And I always notice him long before I get to the location. Again, I have no idea how he plans this stuff out. And secondly, there's always a trap set somewhere directly between when I first spot him and his actual location. Like, if I were to draw a line from him to where I see him from, the trap will always be on that line. Also, another important thing to realize is that none of his traps are fatal. They're all meant to keep me from escaping, but not kill me. They do hurt, though. One time I almost stepped in a bear trap he had set out, and it for sure would have broken my leg had it got me. This non-fatal part was his downfall. I figured out that he didn't want me to die in a trap. He probably wanted to do the deed himself. Or maybe do something else, but he really didn't want me dead in a trap. So all I had to do to get him riled up was die in a trap, right? After the lady in the tree hooked me up with a pistol a little over a year and a half ago, one of the first problems I wanted to solve with it was the creator of the various nets, ankle snares, and holes that attempted to contain me many times before. and I knew exactly how I was going to do it. One of Camo's recurring traps was just a large 11-foot-deep hole covered by a large amount of suspiciously patterned sticks and leaves that could literally be seen 100 yards away. I just had to wait until he used this trap again. After a swinging log that I think was supposed to knock me out and another net that was meant to land on top of me, I might add that it was made of wire so I couldn't cut through it, but it also had a glare from the sunlight that made it impossible not to see, I finally came across the trap I was looking for. 4 weeks after I got the gun, I find myself walking towards an 11-foot hole trying to pretend that I didn't see it. Suddenly, I start falling. I was ready for the fall and let out a loud yell as I traveled downwards, and as I hit the ground, I stayed as quiet as possible, which was hard considering the broken toe and dislocated knee I just received. Screw you, Camo, for making me do this. I army crawled over to the side of the hole and laid my head against the side to make it look like I had broken my neck. Then I waited. It took 15 minutes for that little jerk to dramatically make his way over to me, but I heard him walk up to the edge of the hole. I obviously had to close my eyes to appear dead because I couldn't run the risk of blinking, but I almost smiled when I heard Camo mutter to himself, "Oh crap, no, 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 they're gonna be so pissed!" I took advantage of the moment and quickly opened my eyes and whipped out the pistol, firing 3 shots at him as quickly as I could. I missed with all but one. The bullet that met its mark put a hole in Camo's shoulder, and he let out a garbled scream of nonsense and gibberish. Something along the lines of, "You piece of fucking you, I can't believe that ass fucking you shit, ah!" He did end up running away, but as he ran, I heard him say, "Fuck this dude, I'm shit, I'm fucking done." I was laughing my ass off, till I realized I was severely injured and had to climb out of the hole. Good thing it was daytime, though, or I might not have noticed the black rope that Camo had lowered into the hole while he was cursing himself for killing me. I somehow managed to pop my knee back in joint, based on the stuff I'd seen earlier in life, and climbed out to limp my way back to the house. That was a good day. Broken toes are expensive to get treated, though. The best part is that I haven't seen Camo since that day. It actually worked. Wish I could pull something like that off with Skinny. Another thing that I guess I need to explain to all of you is the lady in the tree. I've mentioned her a couple of times now, and at least some of you are probably wondering about her. I honestly don't know much about her myself, but she's hands down the best thing on this property. My first experience with her was when she healed a broken eardrum that I had suffered when meeting what I think was a banshee down in my creek. It was busted when she screeched really loud, and when I went to sleep, I woke up perfectly fine the next morning. I almost thought it was all a dream until I saw the blood still on my pillow and the broken flashlight I had used in personal defense. Well, I guess this was the first time she affected me directly, but not the first time that she had helped me out. The true first time I didn't realize was her until last night. It was the gun. The gun that I talked about purchasing in part one wasn't really purchased. I just wasn't willing to admit that I looted it off an old corpse that I found in an abandoned log cabin in the back of the property. This is an example of how sneaky she is. I only started to wonder if it was her doing while I was recording the first set of these stories, and I started thinking about how good a shape this gun was in. Of course, it was a little dirty when I found it, but it was also in perfect operating condition. And I figured that the skeleton that was clutching it didn't need it anymore. But hell, at this point, I wouldn't be surprised if he came to life each night. Either way, I left the cabin with a new sidearm and 2 boxes of ammunition. I didn't really think about it too much, because finding a gun on a body is pretty mild, considering the events that go down here on a week-to-week basis. But yesterday, I started questioning the real origins of this gun. It was so well-maintained and new-feeling when I got it, but the skeleton looked like it had been there forever. Not to mention the fact that the gun was unloaded and the boxes of ammo were unopened, but the skeleton looked like it had died holding the gun like he was intending to use it. It didn't add up. So I headed back to the cabin and I found my answer. Everything was the same when I got there as it had been over a year ago. I mean, nothing had changed, especially not the body. The exact same as before. I was nervous at first, not because the body scared me, but because the joke about the skeleton coming back to life from earlier wasn't really that far-fetched in this place. I've never seen an undead skeleton, but I have seen other forms of undead. Maybe I'll tell you about those experiences sometime. Nervous or not, though, I had to confirm my suspicions. I approached the body and started examining the clothes. Just like I expected, the flannel shirt and brown jeans had no tags. Not like they'd been ripped out, but like they were never there to begin with. Now, there was only one more thing to check. I took out my knife and scraped the blade down the skeleton's exposed arm bone. Sure enough, a shaving fell off. It was wood. The entire skeleton was made of wood and painted a lightish brown, among other discolorations, to look like the real deal. The lady in the tree is very talented when it comes to wood, but she can do so much more. I've only seen her in person two times, once when I caught a glimpse of her smiling as she walked into an opening into a tree, only to close the opening with a door that fit so perfectly I couldn't see the edges when I walked up to it. It just looked like a normal tree. And a second time, 2 days after I encountered the screeching banshee in the creek. I saw her out the window of my front door, smiling in. She winked at me and ducked out of view. I ran to the door to try to see her fully, but by the time I swung the door open, she was gone in the night, nowhere to be seen. Which is really annoying. I would almost consider us friends by now, and she still won't show herself to me fully. Now, when I saw her for the second time, I didn't know what or who she was. But when I looked at the ground in defeat, I noticed a small sheet of what looked like homemade paper. On it was a short message that read, "I wish to congratulate you on killing the Keelit. He was bringing an evil over the land that was distressing the forest. I don't know how you actually ended him, but I am happy all the same. I have seen you roaming, and I am certain you have seen me. We work towards the same goal, cleansing this land. My vows as a medicine woman keep me from directly interfering with the creatures of this land, but I wish you luck on your mission and will support you from the shadows as best I can. I hope your ear feels better." So I think the Keelit she was talking about me killing, I think was a rabid coyote that I had killed a few days before the creek incident. It was hairless and just stared at me through some trees. I think it was trying to intimidate me to leave its territory, so I shot it between the eyes and left. My territory, bitch. But this was the first time I realized that I finally had someone on my side on this land, and that was a relief. She was actually really helpful. Once I got bit by a rattlesnake, and when I got home, there was a bottle labeled anti-venom sitting on my kitchen table. Another time I got bit by one of the shadow children while I was hiking, and when I got home, there was a bottle of purple liquid in a glass vial in the same place on the table. I honestly expected it to heal the wound or something, but it just made me really drunk. Guess she couldn't help me much that time. She's done other stuff too, but now I'm kind of worried about her. I haven't heard or experienced any help from her in 8 months. I'm worried something got to her, or even worse. What if she's mad at me? I mean, Skinny almost killed me 6 months ago, and she didn't do crap. I've grown to like her and even depended on her a bit, but she's just gone. I think I'll call it quits for this post, but hopefully I can stay alive long enough to post more. The hunt for Skinny continues, and if you don't know who that is, shame on you for not reading the first post before now. And if you do know who that is, I appreciate any suggestions you have for killing him. See y'all next time. Cole signing off. Up next, it's part 3 of My Property Isn't Normal on Weird Darkness. The chilling true terror of the Black-Eyed Kids, a monster compilation by G. Michael Vasey. The Black-Eyed Kids are an urban legend of vast proportions. The stories of small children turning up on people's doorsteps all across the world, spreading fear and terror, have only increased over time. This compilation of G. Michael Vasey's books on this scary phenomena include new material and new true stories, as well as the complete texts of The Black-Eyed Demons Are Coming and the Black-Eyed Kids. Supernatural expert G. Michael Vasey carefully investigates this truly terrifying phenomenon using real-life encounters with these scary supernatural beings. The result is an unsettling and sometimes terrifying book that'll have you fearfully anticipating that knock at your door late at night. Who and what are these mysterious visitors to the doorstep? Are they demons? Aliens? What do they want? Why do they need to enter your home? And what happens if they do? Small kids that ask to use your phone or for a ride, and yet those who encounter them are scared to death even before they notice their black eyes. The Chilling True Terror of the Black-Eyed Kids, a Monster Compilation by G. Michael Vasey. Narrated by Weird Darkness host Darren Marlar. Hear a free sample on the audiobooks page at WeirdDarkness.com. Hey guys, I'm back. I know it's been a few days since my last post. One of the pails chewed through the wires of my generator, and since civilians are not allowed out here by the organization, I had to wait 3 days for one of their electricians to get out here. The only reason I knew it was a pail that chewed through the main cable was because I watched it do it. I was hoping it would electrocute itself, but I forgot the part where that's the only source of power for my house, since the Chosen had stolen my backup. I realized while I was stuck in the dark for the past 3 days, reading books, hiking out of pure boredom, that I hadn't told y'all about the pails yet. They suck. But they're kind of funny once you figure them out. I've seen them on quite a few occasions on the property. The pails are white humanoids that crawl on the ground on all fours, usually dragging their belly and using the same motion that Spider-Man uses to climb walls. They can move at about a jogging pace, and their faces are usually stuck in distorted expressions of pain or anger. And boy, are they stupid as hell. Let me tell you about the first time I saw one. I'd already been living here about 7 months, I think, so I was becoming familiar with the weird stuff that calls this place home. I was out hiking some of my trails, kind of halfway looking for weird stuff, halfway minding my own business, and suddenly I can hear what sounds like a baseball player sliding through the leaves of the forest floor, trying to reach home plate ahead of me. Only the sliding didn't stop, and it was coming straight towards me. I prepare myself, but taking out my trusty Bear Grylls survival knife and entering what I would describe as an aggressive stance. Felt pretty badass, not gonna lie. Expecting some creature to come barreling out of the bushes in front of me, I was a little shocked to see a butt-naked man with super pale skin drag himself from under the brush on its stomach. What is with naked dudes on my land? Can I get a pretty woman at least once? Anyway, after I got done being flabbergasted and became aware of my surroundings again, I became aware that the dude was almost on me and was reaching out for my leg, so I jumped on his back and it worked like a charm. Little bastard didn't have superhuman strength like some of the other things out here, so when I landed on its back, it couldn't do anything but just sit there and flop its legs and arms around like a fish. At this point, I am on the verge of tears. It hears me laughing, too, and tries to turn its head and spit on me, which it can't do, and that made me actually start crying laughing. I fell off it at this point, and the creature quickly turned around and locked its teeth onto the toe of my left boot. I like to wear steel-toe boots around the property because, even though they're heavy, I know that in a scuffle, being able to kick with a boot and not having to worry about breaking a toe is a nice little advantage. This is what led me to realize that even though the creature didn't have super strength, it did have a super bite force. When it first latched onto my boot, I wasn't worried and started trying to shake the thing off without much urgency. I already knew it wasn't a man by this point because it didn't possess an asshole or other genitals. But I got a little worried when I noticed the end of my boot changing shapes as the steel in the end started to bend. I then said out loud, "If you don't stop right now, I'm going to stab your head, you little shit!" It paused as if debating on the decision, and then slowly started biting down again while its eyes looked up at me as if to try and call my bluff. I wasn't bluffing. A few seconds later, the thing is frantically clawing its way back into the forest with my favorite Bear Grylls survival knife still in the back of its stupid head. Nobody likes a thief. got back home fine, but I had to replace my favorite knife and get a new pair of boots, so it was a pretty crappy hike. It was the next time I saw one when I figured out their biggest fear, and it is so stupid. I was down in my creek playing with a new toy I had gotten in town earlier that week. It was this net that was designed to catch little minnows, and man, it was a blast. I don't really have any use for minnows or whatever other little fish I was catching because I can't go to the only pond on the property that had big fish in it since I made that deal with the crocodile man. So I was just catching them up and letting them go. I'm suddenly greeted by the somewhat familiar sound of a grown man sliding across the ground on their belly. It had been almost 2 months since the last incident I had with a pail, but I immediately recognized the sound. This was the dunce that had stolen my knife, and I really valued that Bear Grylls survival knife that can be purchased at your local Walmart. It's a really good product. Unfortunately, the pail that emerged this time was not the same one. It had a different face and was more of a light pink than the original white that was on the first pail. It was still the same type of creature, though. This time, things went down different. As it tore into the clearing that I was in, about 30 feet from me, it froze with its eyes wide. As it had torn through the brush, I was already facing its direction, holding the net spread out to my side the same way a bullfighter holds a red cape since I was preparing to throw the net into the creek. The pail's eyes were twitching between looking at the net and looking at me, so I looked at the net and back to him. Then it clicked. No way. I giggled to myself as I started to catch on to what was happening. I took advantage of my suspicions and started running and flailing the net around at the pail, and it freaked out. It actually rolled over, trying to turn so fast as it spun around and took off into the woods. I then started wheeze laughing as I fell to the ground with tears running down my face. The thing can bite through steel, but it's terrified of a nylon net? I know that might not be funny to some because I have a twisted sense of humor, but it made my week. Long story short, I kept a little net in my hiking bag every time I go out now, and every pail I come across freaks out when they see it. Good times, man. Wish all the things around here were that easy to deal with. On another note, I got an email from an organization asking me about the keelet that the lady in the tree claimed I killed in the last post. They wanted to know if I had disposed of the body and if they could come and retrieve the remains from the woods if I had just left it there. And then they said something that caught me off guard. When I said something about having to check with the program that put me out here, they responded with, "We are the parent organization of that program," and then proceeded to give me my own address as well as details about my former life that only the program should have known about. In all seriousness, I have a dark past, and I haven't always been a great man, but I'm done with that stuff, and it ticks me off that they would even bring it up. I respond with a simple, "Fine, but don't bring that stuff up again." And then I blocked the emailer. No one has shown up yet, but I guess we'll see what happens. On a good note, I haven't seen Skinny in a couple of weeks, so that's nice. See y'all next time, and feel free to leave your questions in the comments, and if you have any ideas what these pails actually are or what a keelet is, please tell me. If any of you are good with research stuff, I'd appreciate it. Talk to y'all again soon. When Weird Darkness returns, it's part 4 of our story, My Property Isn't Normal, by MurderBird17. Hey Weirdos! Our next Weirdo Watch Party is Friday, February 26th, and it's a double feature! Two horrorable films back-to-back, and both with their own horror hosts. Up first, it's Mad Marty and Horrible Henry from Graveyard Cinema. The guys are bringing us the 1977 horror film Good Against Evil, starring Dak Rambo, Richard Lynch, and a very young Kim Cattrall. And then it's the Queen of the Dark, Lamia, bringing us a horror anthology called Spooky Stories. During both films, you can join me and the whole Weirdo family in the chat room while we watch. The Weirdo Watch Party is always free and always fun, so put Friday, February 26th on the calendar for a double feature of fun. The first movie begins at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, that's 6 p.m. Mountain, 7 p.m. Central, 10 p.m. Eastern, and then the second movie starts immediately after, 2 hours later. Get all the details on the Weirdo Watch Party page at WeirdDarkness.com, and I'll see you all online for the Weirdo Watch Party on Friday, February 26th. Well, I'm back, guys. Welcome to part 4 of this documentary, catalog, diary. I honestly don't know what this is anymore, because I thought I'd only be using this platform to tell stories of stuff that's happened to me in the past on this property, but now I'm being forced to bring this journal to the present. You see, those people from that organization did come to see about the Keelet, and now there's a guy named Mark living in my house and sleeping on my couch. Well, not really sleeping, more of unconscious, but we'll get to that part later. After a few days of this organization that wouldn't tell me their name, not showing up, I figured it was just a troll who managed to figure out my email account and hack into my personal info. But alas, on the third day, he rose. No, not really. But four guys did end up knocking on my front door. They were all dressed pretty normally, except for the matching gray combat boots that told me that these were men of action, which always means that they're going to try their hardest to push me around and play badass. My suspicions were confirmed when the guy in the lead identified himself as Mark and immediately asked me where I claimed to have actually killed a Keelet. What a jerk. Look, I still don't know what a Keelet is, and I don't claim to have killed one. A lady in the tree said I killed one. I only assume she's talking about the hairless coyote I killed down near the creek, I said. At the mention of the lady in the tree, they all looked at each other with an expression of, "This dude is a waste of time," and you know what? The feeling was mutual. I was getting a little impatient by now, so I chimed in with, "If you guys are done being superior to me, I can take you to where I killed the coyote." The one behind Mark, whose name I don't remember, says, "Sure, let's get this over with." 30 minutes later, we're standing in front of where I killed the thing that I now know wasn't a coyote. Look, I know I may not have clarified it yet, but I killed this thing well over a year ago. Crap, maybe 2 years. And the only reason that the organization knew that I had killed it was because of the post I made earlier this week. A lot of decomposing and feeding can happen to a body in the woods over that long of time. On top of that, I hadn't been to this part of the property in a very long time because there aren't any trails or interesting locations here. But I was taken aback when I saw what had happened to this body over the course of the 2 years it had been out here. Absolutely nothing. The body looked like I had shot it yesterday. Only evidence that it was older was the fact that all the blood had all seeped out of the head wound and long since dried up, but the skin and face and the fur on its paws were completely preserved. It only had fur on its paws, which was odd. When we got to the body, the snickering crew of four went dead silent. "You said this was killed around 2 years ago, didn't you?" said Mark. "Yeah, but I haven't been down here since. Why is the thing still preserved like that? What the hell's happening?" I questioned. One of the guys who hadn't said a word up until this point chimed in, "Keelets are so unnatural and dark that nothing that occurs in nature will have anything to do with an authentic one. This includes bacteria, fungi, and scavenger animals." And then he muttered something about a level 107 beast. Mark looked at me with a serious face and said, "So if this Keelet story is true, does that mean all stuff you said in those posts about this place were true?" Before I could answer with a, "What do you think, asshole?" a low, raspy laughter started to surround us and began closing in. It was coming from all directions. We looked up from the body to see at least 50 hooded figures surrounding us, laughing menacingly. All four of the military men pulled their concealed pistols and took aim, but before they could fire a shot, I called out over the laughing, "Hector, I told you next time you and your little chosen crew sneak up on me, I'm kicking your asses again." Everyone paused. The chosen, the four organization men, and the pale that had just crested a hill 30 yards behind one of the cult members. A few seconds later, one of the hooded figures took off his hood to reveal a chubby, jolly-looking face with rosy cheeks and wire-rimmed prescription glasses. "Oh man, we didn't know they were with you, Cole. We thought they were trespassers. We're sorry," Hector said with a downcast gaze. "Why do you even need them to begin with?" I retorted. Hector hesitated for a moment and said, "Our god wants a real sacrifice, and those white crawly humanoid thingies just aren't doing it for him anymore." At this moment, the pale that I could see frozen on top of the hill turned and bolted back into the woods. Hector then proceeded to call to the other hooded figures. "They're with Cole! We can't have them!" There was a collective sigh as all the Chosen looked at the ground and walked away into the woods. I didn't notice until they were all gone that the four organization men hadn't lowered their weapons the entire time. "You sissies ready to head back to the house? Gets dark in 45 minutes, and if those guys got you on edge, you won't last long at night." Mark shot me a look that explained in detail how much he hated me, without the need for words, while his three partners put on thick rubber gloves and put the keylet into a sort of body bag. As we were walking back towards my house with the Three Stooges carrying the corpse of the dog demon, Mark starts questioning me. "What was that group back there?" "Some cult, I guess. They told me they worship Cuth, Hulu, something." He seems kind of taken aback for a second, and then he asked, "Why did they seem wary of you but not flinch when we had guns trained on them?" "Simple. They don't fear death, but they do crack when exposed to severe pain for long enough." Again, Marx seems surprised by my answer. He's starting to strike me as simple-minded. "So how do you inflict this pain on them?" I don't want to answer any more of these questions. And I really didn't. This was the kind of stuff that I don't like to dwell on. That was a different life, and I don't like it when it seeps back into the present. Sure, it's nice to have the local murder cult leave you alone, but I used methods that I regret to get that luxury. The last thing Mark said to me on our hike back to the house was, "Look, dude, my mind is telling me you are batshit crazy, but my instincts are telling me that you're a threat. Which one are you?" I looked him dead in the eyes and mumbled, "That's up to you." Let me tell you, the look on his face was priceless. I love playing mind games. A few minutes later, we reached the house and all four of the goons walked up to the big black van they had arrived in. I start loading up the body, and as I reach my doorknob to go inside, I hear Mark start raising his voice while talking on the phone. "What? This guy isn't even right in the head! I know there's stuff here, but why with... Look, let me get a team down... Okay, yes, he does have experience, but... Wait, what did you just say?" He then stares at me with a mixture of confusion and disbelief. They told him where I came from. I could tell by the way he looked at me. He hung up the phone without any more arguing and began to walk over to me. As he reaches me, he says, "My higher-ups have told me that I need to stay with you for a while and keep an eye on the activity around here." I responded with, "You can't be serious." "Wish I wasn't," he said, and then added, "They also want me to remind you that you didn't pay for this house or this property." With that, I opened the door with my best butler impression and gestured for him to enter my home. As he walked through the door and dropped what I assumed to be his emergency bug-out bag on the floor, he froze. "Can I just say one thing real quick? Screw Skinny." I didn't hear how heavily he was breathing at first because of the van was making noise as it was driving away. But as those sounds faded, I realized that Mark was breathing like he had just sprinted a marathon. His eyes were trained on the window, with his body completely rigid with his hand on his hip, ready to draw his gun. I followed his gaze to the window where I had confronted Skinny many times before. And sure enough, there he was. Only this time he wasn't someone I recognized. This time he was a fairly attractive, tall, and athletically blonde woman. She was smiling and holding a heart-shaped balloon. Upon closer inspection, I could tell that the balloon read, "It's a girl." I rushed in front of Mark to try and snap him out of whatever trance he was in, but I soon realized that tears were welling up in his eyes. By this, I gathered that this woman was no longer with us, and the girl most likely wasn't either. "Screw you, Skinny." I calmly started explaining what Skinny was to Mark, but soon after I started, he stopped me. "I read the stories, Cole. I know that you've talked about this thing before, but I'm trained to handle these kinds of things, so don't worry about me, because I'm gonna kill it." With that, he made a mad dash to the back door in an effort to get outside and confront Skinny. I managed to block him and push him to the ground, saying, "He won't come inside, so just keep it together and we live." Mark was not in a listening mood, though. He jumped back to his feet, straight into a fighting stance. Ah, great. After a second, he threw a fast left hook straight for my face, but he wasn't fast enough. I ducked under the swing and connected my elbow to the underside of his chin. It went out like a light. By the time the scuffle was over, Skinny was gone. I put Mark on the couch and now I'm typing this, thinking about going through his computer before he wakes up. Anyways, that's it for today. Please, if anyone knows what a keelet is, let me know. What did I kill? And what did Mark mean by he was trained to deal with this kind of stuff? What is he, a monster hunter or something? I'll try to get some answers before my next post. See y'all soon. Up next, it's part 5 of My Property Isn't Normal on Weird Darkness. Not everyone who listens to the Weird Darkness podcast sees the custom thumbnails I create for each individual episode, but I do create them. And the images created for today's episode are now available in the Weird Darkness store to be used on face masks, mugs, hoodies, kids' clothes, wall tapestries, t-shirts, magnets, buttons, and more. But today's podcast design is only going to be in the Weird Darkness store for 3 days, and then it's gone. So you'd better move fast if you want any merchandise using the design based on this episode of Weird Darkness. And as always, 100% of the profits I receive are donated to organizations that help those who suffer from depression. Start shopping now before today's design disappears by clicking on Store at WeirdDarkness.com. I usually try to do some kind of intro to these posts, but today I'm too excited to take the time to do that. If you haven't read my previous posts, you should, though. They're quite a bit more action-packed and explain all the events that lead to where I am now. If you haven't read them, you're not going to have any idea what I'm talking about. Y'all remember last post when I joked about Mark being some kind of monster hunter or something? Well, I went through his computer, and I'll be damned if he isn't. He's got files on files on even more files about all these different tangibles, which I think just means monsters. I even managed to find a file on the keelet. No wonder they didn't believe I'd killed one. Apparently, a keelet is a creature in Native American mythology that's described as a furless, dog-like thing. It does have fur on its paws, though, which supposedly makes it impossible to hear or track in the wild. Pretty tame so far, right? Well, don't worry, it gets better. Apparently, looking at them is supposed to immediately fry your brain and disorient you, making you an easy kill for the creature, but that didn't happen to me. The only reason I can think of for the mind cooker effect not happening to me is because I don't process things the same anymore. Not after the events that led me to live out here. Or maybe it wasn't even a keelet. There were a few more details I didn't get to read because before I could finish, I felt cold steel on my neck. Mark had woken up and was now pressing a knife to my throat. "What do you think you're doing with my computer?" "What's it look like? Trying to figure out who the man that was passed out on my couch is." Mark thought for a second, still not moving the knife from my neck, and then he asked, "Why, no, how did you knock me out? I know you have a dodgy history, but close-quarter fighting's my specialty. And all I can remember is going to hit you, and then it went dark." Careful not to move and slit my own throat, I said, "You got desperate and went for a one-hit knockout? Frankly, your left hook is too slow to hit your opponent when you clearly telegraphed exactly what you were planning on doing with your hips." I dropped under the blow and threw an elbow to the bottom of your jaw. The knife loosened a little. "You seem to know your stuff. Why pretend to be a dumbass then?" Excuse me? First of all, I'm not pretending to be anything. Second of all, screw you! The knife fell away completely now. I took the opportunity to turn and start asking my own questions. "So you're an actual monster hunter, huh?" He paused for a moment before replying, "Yeah, I guess I am." "So why is an organization that employs monster hunters also the owner of the organization that's helping me escape my past?" Mark winced this time. Not a good sign. "Cole, the organization that's claiming to help you escape your past probably doesn't exist. My organization has many false companies that it uses to gather intelligence and run experiments. I have reason to believe that They put you out here knowing about your past in an effort to see if anybody could survive in the area that's known for having extremely high levels of tangible activity. They also knew that if you were to die, they wouldn't have to worry about people looking for you. However, I also think that you probably have far surpassed their expectations. The higher-ups haven't actually told me so, but they can't possibly expect anyone to kill a Keyleth on their own, or have fun with a creature like a Fleshgate. Holy crap. It was a lot to take in. I took a deep breath and then cautiously asked, "What the hell is a Fleshgate?" Mark put both of his hands on his head and let out a, "Seriously, dude, does anything even faze you? Fleshgates are those things that you call pales. They're only level 4, but still too much for most people to handle, let alone screw with on a regular basis like you claim to do." There goes that level thing again. I'd seen various levels, ranging from 2s and 3s all the way into the hundreds on the reports that I read while browsing Mark's computer, but I had no clue what they meant. "What's all of this level stuff about? All the monsters on your computer have one, but I don't know what that means." Mark shot me an angry look. Guess he was still mad that I had gone through this stuff. "We base a beast's strength on how many unarmed adult men we predict it'll take down before being overwhelmed. One man is equal to one level." Just then, I remembered that the level beside the Keyleth was 107. "So hold up, you're telling me that the Keyleth that I killed was rated at..." But before I could finish, he interrupted me. "107. No way. I knew about the mind-baking stuff, but that thing was no larger than a golden retriever. No way in hell it could kill 107 people. "Your people predict that the dog thing could kill 107 people?" "No, dumbass. They predict it could kill 106 and then lose at the 107th. I had trouble believing him. "Look, Mark, I read about how they can cook your brain when you look at them, but I stared the thing in the eyes and it had no effect on me at all. Why?" Well, this puzzled him. "I really don't know. That's why I didn't believe it when I first heard that some dude on Reddit claimed to have shot a Keyleth to death. What really confused me is why the higher-ups decided it was worth getting a team to go investigate. Now I know that they're fully aware of the caliber of stuff that happens here. Speaking of caliber, can I see that gun you used on the Keyleth?" Damn it. I knew this was going to happen as soon as I mentioned the gun in my posts. The organization had a gun rule for me, which is why it was a pretty big deal that the lady in the tree had helped me get my hands on one. But now they knew, and they weren't going to let me keep it. "Forget it, dude. I'm keeping the gun whether your bosses want me to or not." To my surprise, Mark looked genuinely confused by my sudden response. "I don't want to take your gun. I just want to see it. A normal pistol shouldn't be able to kill a Keyleth with one shot, no matter how perfect the aim is. I need to see what makes this gun different, and bring the bullets, too. They're what I'm really interested in." He really didn't know about the rule that I'd been given about no guns. Huh, weird. I reluctantly went into my room and retrieved my trusty .45 caliber Thunder Stick and the only box of ammo I had left. I started off with 2 large boxes of bullets, but over time my supply was whittled down to just half a box. As soon as I dropped the weapon and ammo onto the coffee table, Mark immediately started inspecting one of my bullets. "Knew it. You even know what these are, Cole?" .45 caliber?" I responded somewhat slowly. Without looking up from the bullet, Mark began to explain. "These are NAT rounds, NAT rounds, specially designed to deal with unholy creatures of chaos. They're created when the metals used to make the bullets are blessed by a Native American shaman and medicine men. You can tell what they are by the slight warmth they give off and small vibrations you can feel when you squeeze them between your fingers. However, these are the most active rounds I've ever come into contact with. They're much warmer and vibrate more than the rounds that I'm issued. If that lady in the tree gave you these, she's likely more powerful than you realize." Mark looked up, maybe expecting some type of awe at his revelation. Well, that's neat," I responded, somewhat dumbfounded. I guess it was cool to have enchanted bullets and all, but it didn't change much in the grand scheme of things. Kind of like how your car's speedometer goes up to 120 miles per hour. Most people won't ever drive that fast, but it's cool to know that when the time comes, you might be able to. Then again, I guess the magic bullets came in handy when I shot the keelet, as well as a few other things, so maybe I should be more grateful. Before Mark could scold me again for my lack of reaction to his astounding observations, we were interrupted by a knocking on the door. We looked over to see one of the three guys Mark had been working with when he first arrived. Through the window in my door, we could see him frantically beating on the wood and looking over his shoulder. "Mark, it attacked the van! Holy shit, Jack's dead and Phillip's hurt bad! Come help me carry him, please!" Mark started to jump up and then caught himself. "Oh, this thing is good. Almost got me a second time. Crap. Almost got me with the help me technique as well." I started to smile. At least Mark wasn't a complete dumbass. I watched Skinny as he began that stupid grin he always did when he got figured out, and then he darted off. Not much has happened over the past few days, and I'm starting to get used to my new roommate. I'll still keep y'all posted, though. Something wild's bound to happen sooner or later, especially with all the patrols Mark keeps making us go on. Cole signing off for now. When Weird Darkness returns, it's part 6 of our story, My Property Isn't Normal, by MurderBird17. Congratulations to Matthew Hill. He is this month's randomly drawn winner for a Weirdo prize pack, including an extra-large Weird Darkness poster, coffee mug, 2 magnets, and 2 stickers. It's free to enter, and I draw a random name every month from all the names on my Weird Dark News email list. So if you haven't already signed up, now is a good time to do so. You can sign up for Weird Dark News at WeirdDarkness.com. Well, last post I said something wild was bound to happen sooner or later. I wasn't disappointed. Mark's been living here for about a week now, and he finally got what he was looking for. Action. It wasn't really in his favor, though. I mentioned the patrols he keeps taking me on last post, but I didn't really go into detail. He calls them patrols, but it's honestly more of a scavenger hunt. He gave me a damn list, in fact, like a little kid or something. On the list were specific signs and objects that are indicative of tangible activity. Tangible is just fancy talk for monsters. I asked him what an intangible was as a joke, and he nonchalantly said, "Ghosts and other crap that you can't touch." After I realized he was serious, I popped the question, "Why not just say monsters and ghosts and stuff?" He thought for a moment, "Because the people who name this stuff are nerds." Fair enough, I guess. I'm off on a tangent again, back to the scavenger hunt. The list he gave me had a lot of stuff on it, and as I was walking through the woods for the second time that day, one thing on the list kept catching my eye. Stairs. Why the hell would stairs even be on this list? That's not paranormal at all. Also, if there had been stairs in these woods, I would have already found them. That's not something you miss. I mean, I thought this whole search around for stuff idea was stupid from the beginning anyway. I never searched for the hell spawn on this property. It always found me all by itself. The only reason I even participated in Mark's patrols were to humor him so he wouldn't be as crabby and because I liked to get outside anyway. Even so, stairs? I was looking at the list, eyeing down the word stairs for the millionth time when it suddenly got dark. Confused, I looked up to see that it hadn't actually gotten dark. I was just in a shadow that was being cast by a tall, skinny wooden wall. I had been to this exact spot a few days earlier, and there had been no such object. The wall was about 5 feet wide and 10 feet tall, and I somehow almost walked directly into it without realizing. I began to walk around it and quickly realized it wasn't a wall. Yep, you probably already guessed. It was the back of a freaking flight of stairs. I was honestly shook. It was like I had summoned them after thinking about them too much. I immediately called Mark on the radio that he'd given me for situations like this and yelled, "Dude, I actually found stairs, like real friggin' stairs out here!" I hadn't been this excited about something in a long time, and I had no idea why I was excited now. I think it had something to do with me thinking the stairs were such a stupid thing to look for, only to end up finding some where I never expected to. Either way, I barely heard Mark respond with, "Okay, just stay put for a minute. I'll be there soon. And please stop screaming. You're scaring away all the things out here." He said something else, but I wasn't listening. I was far too engrossed in these stairs. I had to go up them. It wasn't like they were calling to me or anything, it was just more the fact that I was pretty sure I would be able to see my house from the top of them. So with Mark still saying unintelligible commands on the radio, I began to ascend. As I walked up the stairs, the woods around me started to quiet down, which is weird in retrospect, but I really didn't pay any attention to that at the time. Another thing I noticed was that there wasn't any leaves or dirt or anything on the steps. Anyone who has experience in the woods knows it only takes a few hours for Mother Nature to spread her crap all over any given object that's left in her care. The real anomaly happened when I hit the top step, though. See, the second my heel hit the top step, I heard Mark let out a, "What in the son of a bitch?" Well, I froze. I started weighing my options. If I let whatever was out there kill Mark, I wouldn't have to deal with him anymore. I also told myself I wasn't going to kill people anymore. Does it really count as killing him if I just let him die, though? They'd probably just replace him anyway. I guess I'll go help. And with that thought, I went to go help him. I honestly expected there to be a pail clamped onto his foot or for him to have fallen into one of Camo's traps, but alas, all I found was Mark, without shoes on, just socks, clenching the toes of each of his feet in his hands. Before I could even ask him what was going on, he stuttered, You went on the damn stairs, didn't you?" "Yes, and why does that matter?" I'm telling you, if looks could castrate, "Bad stuff happens when you go up the stairs, you dick. I told you over the radio not to go up them." Must have missed that part. What happened to you anyways?" Now, this part is kind of nasty. Mark let go of the end of one of his socks to reveal that the toe area was covered in blood. He then removed the sock, and I shit you not, all of his toenails were gone. "Damn! How'd you manage that? Are you daft, Cole? You did this when you went up the stairs." "Yeah, sounds stupid, I know, but I kind of believe him because I know for a fact that those stairs aren't normal. I'm certain of this because when I went back to show Mark where they were, who was limping something awful, they weren't there anymore. Just disappeared." Mark wasn't surprised by this either. And in case you were wondering, I could not see my house from the top, which was a bummer. Well, that's about it for the stairs, but something else did happen yesterday, the day after the stair incident. I actually met a brand new monster. At least new to me, anyway. I think Mark knew what it was, but he won't tell me. It gave him the spooks, though. As you may have already gathered, it happened on one of Mark's patrols. He was actually adjusting to life without toenails pretty good. I'll give him that. The night before, he took a large amount of bandages and some rubbing alcohol from my bathroom. Guess he did a good job on himself because he was walking pretty close to normal now. I did hear a lot of groaning and heavy breathing that night in my living room, though. I hope it was him patching himself up and not having fun on his laptop, if you know what I'm saying. Anyways, we were walking through an area of the woods that stays somewhat dark during the day due to the dense tree cover blocking out most of the sun. Other than the lack of light, everything seemed pretty docile. That was until Mark started complaining about a noise. "Cole, you hear that? I think it's like static or something." "What? No, I don't hear a th—" Mark put a hand on my chest, stopping me mid-sentence. I look over at him to see what's up, and he's staring at me with extremely wide eyes. "We need to get to the house now." I'd never seen him get this flustered, so I knew things were serious. I nodded, and we both turned to run to the house, but the tall man was already blocking the way. Now, when I say tall man, I mean really, really tall man. I'm also fairly certain he wasn't a man. A tall man just makes a good name. He was between 10 and 12 feet tall and was wearing clothes made out of what looked like dirty brown and tan rags stitched together. These rags covered his whole body, including his hands, feet, and face. He was also thin, but something deep in my gut told me that he held some kind of unnatural strength. As his image sank into my brain, I heard Mark whisper, "Holy shit, it's really one of them!" off to my left. There was complete silence for a while, not actually sure how long. The only thing that I could hear was a slight, static, buzzing sound. No one moved in the silence, not Mark, not me, not the pail that was about to bite into Mark's leg while he was distracted. Wait. Holy shit, Mark, look out! Pail on your right! With surprising speed, Mark pulled out his Glock and put two shots in the pail's head. It didn't move after that, but the tall man did. The sudden scuffle seemed to set the tall bastard off into a rage, and the once subtle static sound grew into a roar. It was like no sound I'd ever heard before. Maybe something like the sound of metal being ground up by other metal. However, the sound was the least of our worries. It started sprinting at us. It was originally about 30 yards away, but it seemed to cover the distance in the blink of an eye. He was on us before we could react. He went for Mark first, reached out for him with one of those long, skinny arms. His fingers seemed to stretch out just so that he could reach all the way around Mark's torso. As Mark was lifted off the ground, kicking and yelling, he emptied the rest of his clip into the tall man's head. It did nothing. That's about the time when the big, black tentacles ruptured out from the creature's back, six new weapons now ripping holes in the rags. This thing must be terrible at making its own clothes. Like, how hard would it be to just make tentacle holes so you don't end up ripping your shirts? Anyhow, I really didn't want this big fellow ripping up Mark, so I had to figure something out. Before it managed to obliterate old Marky, I drew my gun and emptied my own clip into various parts of the monster in an effort to find a weak spot. No luck. In fact, the bullets bounced off of him. One of them whizzed right past my ear. It was like under those rags he was made of steel. But I'm no quitter. I now had his attention, and I'm pretty sure Mark was going unconscious at this point because he couldn't breathe due to the thing's death grip. I drew my brand new Bear Grylls survival knife and lunged with all my strength at its leg. But I didn't stab it. If bullets couldn't get through this thing's skin, my knife didn't have a chance, but I had a plan. I got behind it, only to get snatched into the air by one of its tentacles. I was immediately faced to, rags with this thing. Its tentacle was wrapped tightly around my stomach. It now had Mark and I both exactly where it wanted us. I swear, I could hear a deep, demonic laughter within the still-roaring static that filled my brain. But it stopped laughing when I started. I began scream laughing. Not really sure why, sometimes I think I might actually be insane. The tall man cocked his head to the side as if saying, "You do know you lost, right?" The only thing I was able to say before the last of my air was squeezed out of me was, "I really hope this fucking works!" And with that, I took the knife that was still in my hand and sliced at the tentacle as hard as I could. My hope was that since the tentacle could move so fluidly, the skin would have to be softer and weaker, otherwise it would be stiff and not flexible. Ooh, how right that theory was. I was met with a spray of hot, black liquid, and the static sound morphing into the sound of nails on a chalkboard. I fell 7 or 8 feet to the ground and landed flat on my back. That hurt, but adrenaline is a hell of a chemical, so I was back on my feet almost immediately. Two things I noticed right off the bat. It was still holding a now unconscious Mark, and my attack hadn't quite managed to slice through the entire tentacle, but I was close. The thing seemed to be deciding on whether to retreat or try to kill me again. I took advantage of his slight hesitation and leapt at the now limp tentacle. I grabbed it and yanked with all the force I could muster. Now it completely severed itself from the beast. Suddenly, all the sounds in my head stopped, and I heard Mark hit the ground off to my right. I look up only to see the tall man's covered head aimed at its now disconnected appendage, then at me, then at the woods behind him, then at me, then at his tentacle. Something tells me he's never been injured before. After he finished looking at stuff, he bolted backwards just as fast as he'd approached us before. Yes, he sprinted off backwards. What is it with monsters and running backwards? Seems silly to me and dangerous. Anyway, I ended up having to carry old Mark over my shoulder back to the house, and he could stand to lose a few pounds. He woke up a few hours later and interrogated me on how I'd managed to scare the thing off after he passed out. I told him I just ripped off my clothes and started running at the thing until it ran off. Mark said he won't let me see the thing's file until I tell what really happened, but I wanted to sell the naked story. Maybe I'll tell him what really happened later and let y'all know the real name of the creature. Or maybe I'll keep trying to convince Mark that While he's a monster hunter, I'm a monster predator. That's it for now, guys. I'll post again soon. In case you were wondering, I have not seen Skinny in a few days and still haven't heard from the lady in the tree in a while. But life goes on, right? Until next time, Cool, signing off. Up next, it's Part 7, the final chapter of the series My Property Isn't Normal by Murderbird 17, when Weird Darkness returns. If you or someone you know struggles with depression or dark thoughts, I'd like to recommend the Hope in the Darkness page at WeirdDarkness.com. There, I've gathered resources to help fight depression with the 7 Cups app, connecting you with people who've also struggled with depression and are there to lift you up, even professional listeners there to listen at all hours of the day. If you're having dark thoughts of harming yourself or worse, there's the Suicide Prevention Lifeline that you can either call or chat online with anytime, 24/7. The folks at ifred.org are doing what they can with research and education on depression to give us the tools we need to fight against it in the days ahead. And if you feel a lack of hope in your life, take the 30-Day Global Hope Challenge. It's absolutely free. You can do it alone or with a friend or with a group. And after 30 days, you'll have a better understanding of how to build hope in your own life and in the life of others. You can find all of this on the Hope in the Darkness page at WeirdDarkness.com. So Mark got possessed. It was a new experience for me, honestly. Also, I think we're going to have to deal with Skinny soon. He destroyed a van the other day that was carrying supplies out to us. I'll get to that later, though. I actually learned a lot from the spirit that possessed Mark before it left, and yes, it left. I didn't have to banish it or anything. Let me just tell the story before I end up spoiling something. The day after the Tall Man incident, refer to Part 6 for information on that, Mark started acting funny, but in a good way, in my opinion. He was much less commanding and hostile, like he had no energy. This meant he didn't want to keep checking around the property for monsters constantly, and I was able to do what I wanted again without him complaining. When I noticed the change in his behavior, I thought of 2 reasons that could be causing Mark to act this way. 1, he was sick. 2, he was being a little scaredy-girl after almost being killed by the Tall Man. Turns out I was wrong on both counts. After 2 days of Mark being reserved and borderline unresponsive on my couch, I knew something was up. As much as I don't want to admit it, Mark is a badass in his own right. He isn't the kind of person to crumble after a traumatic event. He's a fighter. I was aware of his unnaturally aggressive fight-over-flight response when he first encountered Skinny and almost rushed out to certain death just to show Skinny that he wasn't here to play games. On top of that, he didn't show any real signs of sickness. He was tired and slow to respond, yeah, but he wasn't sensitive to light like a concussion. He wasn't hot or cold, no runny nose, no trouble breathing, etc. It was on this day of this strange behavior, yesterday, when I confronted him and got an answer. So, Mark, any idea why you're so tired and lazy and stuff? Just as I finished asking this, Mark shot up to a sitting position on the couch and whipped his head around to face me. In a voice much higher than his regular voice, he exclaimed, "I thought you would never ask! I finally finished taking over this body a few hours ago and was waiting for the right moment to reveal myself. You see, Mark is on vacation right now and I'm taking his place." "Oh, nice. When will he be back?" His wide smile quickly found itself upside down. "You know what, Cole? This is why I really hate you. You are literally no fun whatsoever."
"Well, if you aren't Mark, then I don't know you, and how would you know that I'm not fun? Don't you know it's wrong to judge a book by its cover?"
The replacement Mark's voice was starting to sound irritated. "I'm a ghost, dipshit. I've been here for months trying to fuck with you. I even tried to possess you, but unfortunately for me, you are incompatible. And no matter how hard I tried to get your attention or scare you, I was always met with you just brushing it off. I worked really hard, too, like that time I moved the TV while you were watching, or the time I put holes in all your socks to make a big toe pop out."
I was finally starting to catch on to what was happening at this point.
"Oh, I thought the TV was just the what? Holy crap! You're the one who put holes in my socks? You piece of... You made me think I had sandpaper toes!" He chuckled a little.
At least that one worked anyways. As you probably already knew, being a ghost has its limits. It's extremely difficult to have any effect on the physical world, and we can't affect living tissue in any kind of direct way whatsoever, but now that I have a vessel, I can finally kill you.
Well, shit, that escalated quickly. As I process the new information that I've just received, Fake Mark speaks up again.
One thing I bet you didn't know is that, as a ghost, when I take over a body, I can't see all of the host's memories. But the body still retains any natural reflexes and skills that the host had acquired through his or her lifetime. And this guy has some serious badass skills.
Fake Mark then sprang to his feet and did a roundhouse kick that shattered a nearby lamp into a million pieces, then turned to my wall, punched as hard as he could. I'm pretty sure he expected to punch right through, but he only ended up leaving some bloodied knuckle prints.
Yeah, there's a stud there, I said, as Fake Mark doubled over, holding his damaged hand.
I now realize that, thank you,
he wheezed out before standing back up straight again.
Even so, this guy is plenty skilled enough to end your sorry ass,
Fake Mark shouted with a wicked grin.
You must have been out the first night he got here, but okay.
He cocked his head a little after this comment, then quickly brushed it off and lunged at me. I'll try to explain what happened next as best I can. As he rushed me, he threw a right-handed jab at my head. I countered this by hooking my arm over the side of his shoulder with my left arm as I ducked the punch and put my right arm between his legs so I could lift him off the ground. I then did a fireman throw, which basically means I tossed him into the air and subsequently slammed him back onto the ground by exploding back up to a standing position and releasing my hold on his leg while still keeping a strong grip on his shoulder. This made Fake Mark fly over my head and still slam onto the ground at my feet. I wanted to explain how this happened so people don't just accuse me of bullshitting. And for the record, I don't think this would have worked on real Mark. I'm sure he would have seen it coming. Anyways, this should have knocked the breath out of him, so I wasn't ready when he punched the back of my knee and dead-legged me so perfectly I went straight to my ass. Middle school me would have taken notes on perfect execution of this move. Fake Mark ended up getting back to his feet before me, unfortunately, and jumped onto me, putting me flat on my back. Fake Mark then reeled his fist back for a final blow, and his fist flew towards my face, but I managed to move my head to the side at the last second, and his fist connected with the hardwood floor at a respectable speed. He may have been able to recover from this quickly if it hadn't been the same hand that he had already smashed on the wall a few moments before. As Fake Mark winced at the pain, I threw my leg into the air and proceeded to connect with his no-no area. It was more effective than the slam from earlier, that's for sure. I stood up slowly while Fake Mark tried to decide if he should use his remaining good hand to grab his crotch or his shattered knuckles. Before he could decide, I grabbed his Glock that was sitting on the coffee table and took aim. Didn't take Fake Mark long to look up and realize that I now had complete control of the situation. He stood up but didn't make any further advances at me. He instead opted to put on a pouty face and plop down in my recliner in defeat. And then it hit me. Why are you afraid of dying? That isn't even your body. You can't die again, can you? Fake Mark snapped back in a still somewhat aggressive tone.
If this body dies while I'm in it, I'll get sent back. I don't think I'll be able to escape again if that happens.
Why are people always so vague when I ask a question? Escape from where? That's an important detail. I fully expected Fake Mark to snap back again, but all he did was look at me in the eyes and mumble, "Hell." The absolute terror on his face seemed genuine, and usually I try to stay respectful and patient when someone's in an emotional state like that. Unfortunately for Fake Mark, he wasn't a person. He was a ghost that was possessing my acquaintance, and I don't really appreciate that very much, so I continued with my questioning. How'd you escape hell the first time? Fake Mark was surprisingly cooperative now.
I found a gateway and walked through it. Ended up on this land. I think there's some sort of portal to hell around here. Seems that it's mostly ancient creatures that come out, though, instead of regular spirits. Only thing I can figure is that they were banished to hell only to be let back out at this location.
Damn, I was expecting a badass story about a battle with the devil, not an actual plausible cause for all this crazy stuff that goes on here.
Well, you seem to know your shit. Why do I get the idea that you know more about hell and monsters than the average lost soul?
I was a preacher in life.
Then why were you in hell?
Because I studied the occult in my spare time and skimmed out of the donation bowl.
Ah, that makes sense. Guess God's cheeky like that. But what makes you think that all the weirdos in the woods come from a portal to hell?
Fake Mark then started speaking in a more relaxed and confident manner.
Not all the beasts out there come from the portal, actually. Most of them don't. Just some of the particularly nasty ones. You met one the other day, I think. You called him the Tall Man. He's a recent immigrant. I think he got banished in the 70s by some monster hunting group. He was one of the more average ones, but you already know the most powerful one, don't you?
At this, Fake Mark started grinning. He was right. I knew exactly who he was talking about.
It's that Chuck Hulu guy that the Chosen worship, isn't it?
Fake Mark's grin transformed into a grimace.
Holy hell, Cole! I seriously fucking despise you. It's that thing you call skinny. Cthulhu is a cosmic entity from another plane of existence, a separate one from hell. Skinny, on the other hand, is absolutely a product of hell.
So he's a demon, then?
No, not a demon, but an amalgamation of at least a few other creatures that I'm pretty sure old Lucifer created himself. If I had to guess, Lucy's planning to take over the mortal plane, and he's throwing some creatures out here to test the waters before his final assault.
Shit. That's not good. I might be on his bad side since I keep mooning Skinny. Also, do you know what Skinny is?
No, but I do know that he doesn't seem to be able to enter a home without being invited in, and when he takes the appearance of something, whether it be a sumo wrestler or a bunny rabbit, he maintains the same weight and strength as his regular form.
And how do you know he stays the same weight?
Because I once saw him spying on you as a squirrel, only to snap the giant branch he was perched on under his weight, then proceeded to shred the trunk of the tree with his little squirrel claws until it fell over out of frustration.
I remember that tree. I thought it'd been attacked by the family of six-legged beavers that lived down by the creek, but I guess I was wrong.
It was beginning to seem like Fake Mark was a serious asset when it came to knowing about the stuff around here. I'm also curious about what different monsters make up Skinny. If any of you have any ideas, feel free to comment them because I'm pretty clueless as of now. The invitation thing is from vampires, though, isn't it? I don't know. Sounds too cliché to be true.
Anything else you want to get off your chest, preacher man?
I guess I hit a nerve with that question.
Fuck you! I'm a woman! I'm tired of you being so damn clueless!
What? I didn't know that women preachers were a thing.
Again, poor choice of words, Cole.
That's it! I'm leaving!
We were practically screaming at each other at this point, which in hindsight was really unnecessary.
Okay, to be fair, you don't look or sound like a girl in Mark's body. And all I ask is that you answer one more question.
Fine, she yelled.
I've been wondering about this since the beginning of the conversation, so I was ecstatic to get one more chance to ask.
You said I was incompatible for you to possess me. Why is that?
At this, Fake Mark took on a serious expression.
It means that you are either a descendant of some saint or some godly power favors you, or maybe... No, couldn't be that.
And with that, Fake Mark seemed to pass out. Guess it was the spirit leaving the body. Soon after, real Mark started to wake up and ask where he was. I told him it was a long story, but he should probably get some fresh air before I told him. When he grabbed my outstretched hand so I could help him up, I squeezed. While he yelled in pain, I calmly told him, "You owe me a new lamp." Well, that's all for Mark's possession. He actually took the news pretty well. I think he's been possessed before or something. I kept the part about me being incompatible to myself. Not really sure why, it just didn't seem like something I should share at the time. Things are heating up around here. Something big is going to happen soon. And with the information we got out of Spirit Preacher Lady, it's starting to look like me and Mark can't do this on our own. I think he called in backup, but he won't actually tell me for sure. He just keeps looking out the windows a lot. I'll update again soon. Cole signing off. And that's how the series ends. Part 8 was never posted, and Part 7, which you just heard, was posted 2 years ago, so it's possible the author just chose to abandon the story. which is a real shame because there are questions I want answers to. Mainly, what did he do in his life previously to get him sent to this forest? He never explains it. Does the portal from hell eventually get closed, or does Lucifer get to call this mortal coil home now? And whatever happens to Skinny? Oh well, I guess like many TV shows that simply get canceled without notice, we're going to be left wondering. And wondering. Thanks for listening. Feel free to email me anytime with your questions or comments at darren@weirddarkness.com. Darren is D-A-R-R-E-N. You can also find all of my social media and a link to the Weird Darkness Weirdos Facebook group on the contact page of the website. If you're listening to Weird Darkness on the radio, on a streaming station, or on YouTube, be sure to subscribe to Weird Darkness in your favorite podcast app, too. I upload episodes there 7 days a week. I'd also appreciate you leaving a review of the show in the podcast app you listen from, and share Weird Darkness with somebody you know who loves the paranormal or strange stories, true crime, monsters, or unsolved mysteries like you do. You can also vote for Weird Darkness in the Hot 50 Countdown in Podcast Magazine every day you hear an episode, and please, vote every day. To do so, go to WeirdDarkness.com/vote, or click on Vote at WeirdDarkness.com. Do you have a dark tale to tell of your own? Click on Tell Your Story on the website and I might use it in a future episode. Stories on Creepypasta episodes are works of fiction, and links to the stories or the authors can be found in the show notes. My Property Isn't Normal was written by Redditor MurderBird17, and a link to the story online is in the show notes. And if you happen to know, if there is a Part 8 or Part 9 or whatever that I couldn't find, let me know. Weird Darkness is a production of Marler House Productions. Copyright Weird Darkness 2021. And now that we're coming out of the dark, I'll leave you with a little light. 1 John 4, verse 11. Dear friends, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. And a final thought. Talk with people who make you see the world differently. I'm Darren Marler. Thanks for joining me in the Weird Darkness.